Okay, next case for argument, Warren v. Bannon. Ms. Verka?
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Maureen Verka. I'm representing Shun Warren in this habeas appeal. Shun Warren is a prisoner who fell through the cracks of the system. Problems started here when his court-appointed trial counsel didn't conduct the most basic investigation of his case and instead gave him incomplete advice on whether to plead guilty or no contest to first-degree reckless homicide. Her advice was plead guilty or go to jail for life for intentional homicide. He took her advice, pled no contest, and then the entry of that plea.
Was he actually shot? You said in your brief he was shot in the thigh.
Yes. He was shot in the thigh and was treated for that gunshot wound down here in Chicago. So that plea entry was not informed and it was not intelligent, and it was the starting point for a cascade of errors that led him
what
here.
What would you have wanted the judge to tell him?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
What would you have wanted the judge to say to him?
To say to the defendant during sentencing? I think not that he was trying to weasel out of his plea, Your Honor. Not that he was trying to weasel out of his plea when he asked to withdraw it. That was the error that the trial court made at his sentencing.
Now, your argument, there wasn't sufficient disclosure.
Correct.
About the consecutive sentence?
No, I'm sorry, Your Honor. There was not a disclosure of the eyewitnesses to the struggle in the car. So his attorney was a court-appointed attorney. She had police reports and the criminal complaint against him. And she reviewed those, but didn't review them completely with Mr. Warren.
You've done such a wonderful job here, but surely he must have known, as we all do, even just from, you know, watching television, that the defense of self-defense was available to him. I mean, how would a witness's statement about a struggle have helped him to decide to make that claim?
That's a very good question. We actually don't know because she didn't conduct the investigation. So we don't know. If she had found the witnesses, talked to them, they may have had details about that, about the struggle, about what they saw that were never uncovered because she didn't conduct the investigation. And as soon as Mr. Warren found out that these witnesses were there, he attempted to the question is, would the outcome have been different if he had known about these witnesses? And the answer is absolutely the outcome would have been different. And it was, he proved it by moving to withdraw the plea.
But the eyewitness statement in the police report wasn't really an eyewitness statement. It was someone reporting what her sister, the alleged eyewitness, saw. So that's an awful lot of hearsay for Warren to hang a habeas on, isn't it?
I agree that there were other witnesses. The witness that tested or that provided the police report was not the witness that saw the struggle. And there were two witnesses that supposedly saw the struggle. The only point I think here is because the attorney did not conduct an investigation, we don't know what it is that they would have said. And I think that then the question is, well, what is the prejudice to him? And the prejudice is he would have changed his plea, or he wouldn't have entered the no contest plea had he known about it.
I don't believe that for a moment.
Your Honor,
there was no way he was going to get off on self-defense.
He could have gotten a lesser plea.
He takes the gun with him in order to rob this guy, and then he kills him, and he leaves, and of course doesn't report it to medical authorities or anything. You think a jury is going to let a guy off with that?
They may not have, but they also
might
have.
They would not have. It's not realistic. He made a good play.
He
made a sensible play.
I'm not sure that's the case. He could have gotten a negligent homicide finding. He could have gotten a second
negligent
degree.
Look, he's bringing a. You think a robber who has a gunfight with his victim and the victim dies, gets off on self defense, goes to rob a person, they fight over the gun, he kills the victim. He doesn't report it he wounds him seriously, he doesn't report it to the medical authority, and you think a jury lets him off for self-defense?
His defense was
that's
that
ridiculous.
He did not his defense
that is absurd.
Your Honor, if that's the facts, then it would be, except that he disputed that he ever intended to rob Mr. Morrow. His
position, if he won this case and decided to go to trial, he'd be a fool.
Your Honor, we don't know because no one talked to the witnesses. Okay, I think that's the first point, is we don't know what would have happened because no one talked to the witnesses. And we also don't know what would have happened because his lawyer did not advise him as
to the this fight is in the car. Where are the witnesses?
The witnesses were outside of the car.
How far?
We don't know. We do not know because his lawyer did not conduct an investigation. His lawyer did not talk to the witnesses.
There are gunshots and people are fighting in a car, and the witnesses are what? They're standing a foot away staring in?
You've
got a little bit of realism occasionally.
Well, I actually think it is realistic to think that there was another version of events.
Is this during the night, isn't it?
I believe it was at 4:30 p.m.
In what month?
June.
So
or no,
light.
I'm sorry, 8:30 p.m. in June.
8:30 in June, so
probably pretty light still. But I think the point is that he disputes that he intended to rob the victim. He was unaware
he didn't remember anything.
He did not remember certain aspects of it. What he did not recall,
What didn't he recall?
The record's not entirely clear on what he recalled, except what his lawyer said at the sentencing or at the plea hearing was that he didn't recall making statements that he intended to rob someone.
What did he recall about the shooting?
He recalled that he struggled with that he was sitting in the car, he was purchasing marijuana from
the police. He didn't remember anything.
No, he didn't tell the police he didn't remember anything. He told the court that he didn't remember part of what had happened. He doesn't.
What part didn't he remember?
He did not recall telling anybody that he intended to rob the victim.
That's what he didn't recall?
That's what he didn't recall.
Did he recall the fight?
Yes, he did recall the fight. In fact, there's a police report, a police interview report that was taken shortly after the incident, and he recollected and he told the police, I took the gun from Stormy Dixon not because I wanted to rob someone, but because I was afraid that Stormy Dixon was going to go shoot some guy he didn't like down the street. He went into the car to do the marijuana deal. He had the gun in his pocket. This is what he told the police in this police report. He had the gun in his pocket. Mr. Morrow, the victim, saw the gun, grabbed it, and then that's when the struggle ensued. And shots went off. Mr. Warren was shot twice in the thigh, and that Mr. Morrow was shot mortally shot. So that's his version of the events. Now that could have certainly have supported.
What does he say? The only thing he didn't recall was telling someone that he was planning to rob.
That's what his lawyer. Yes, that's what his lawyer told the court in the plea hearing. Was that?
But if he didn't recall it, he couldn't contradict that witness.
Well, the witness was a convicted felon. So, I understand there are difficulties with whether or not he would have gotten free, and I admit that. But the witness that said he said this was a convicted felon who was facing charges and was getting a lower charge based on his testimony against my client. So my client's version...
All these cases.
Well, my client's version of the events is that that a struggle ensued and that he didn't mean to kill him. So with that, I think my time's up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Brien?
May it please the court. The transcript of the plea hearing represents what I would suggest is what the type of colloquy every trial judge should engage in with a defendant pleading to a homicide offense. The judge thoroughly explored with Mr. Warren and with his attorney, Ms. Wynn, the nature of the charge, not only that he was originally facing, but the charge that he was about to plead to, reckless homicide while armed, the various constitutional trial rights he was to be giving up, including the right to a jury trial, the right to present defenses such as perfect or imperfect self-defense, the right to present witnesses on his own behalf, the right to cross-examine the state's witnesses. And then he explored with Mr. Warren the potential penalties he was facing. The fact is, and furthermore, the judge specifically discussed with both Warren and defense counsel the possibility of a self-defense claim and the Stormy Dixon allegations in the criminal complaint that he went there with the intent to rob. So that was all laid out on the record at the plea hearing. It truly was an antiseptic plea that would have satisfied Rule 11 had it occurred in federal court and satisfied Wisconsin's counterpart, Section 97108, setting forth the requirements for a voluntary and intelligent plea. Extremely problematic for Mr. Warren is the transcript of the plea hearing, and it certainly is, because it is plain that he entered a plea, a voluntary and intelligent plea, on the sound advice of competent defense counsel who worked hard on this case and explored the difficulties. And it's not clear whether or not she talked to these witnesses. The fact is that there are police reports indicating that had she talked to them, it would have been pretty useless, because these people, Judge Rovner correctly pointed out, there was quite a bit of hearsay here. And it was nebulous testimony. The police report is in the record of Ms. Washington talking about what her sister said about seeing some sort of a struggle but not telling the police because she didn't want to be labeled a snitch, and her friend Ms. Brown, who was in the car, saw something, but she didn't want to get involved and left. I doubt that a jury would give that testimony much credit. And I think it was highly reasonable for counsel to pursue plea negotiations with the state and to get this knocked down to try, and consistent with Mr. Warren's claim all along that he didn't intend to kill this man. Whether you believe that or not, the charge that he pled guilty to is really what he should have been satisfied with. It takes out the element of intent. And under Wisconsin law, he had no right to even put on a claim of self-defense, because the self-defense claims assumes that you intended to shoot, intended to harm the other person, but you did so to protect yourself. That may or may not be, may have been on an unreasonable belief, and that makes it imperfect, but imperfect self-defense only gets you down to the same penalty that he ended up with by pleading to reckless homicide. So what we have here is a voluntary and intelligent plea entered unequivocally on the competent, on the sound advice of competent counsel, and the appellate attorney who came along later with little to challenge did the best she could, Attorney Bowe, by arguing that the trial judge really should have let him withdraw his plea when he asked for it before sentencing, because it satisfied the minimal, fair, and just reason standard in Wisconsin and discussed by the United States Supreme Court in United States v. Hyde, and that's a discretionary act. And the trial judge in his discretion denied the motion, because the trial judge concluded that basically he just wanted to go to trial and present the self-defense claim that he had expressly waived at the plea hearing. And so the attorney Bowe went with, that was really the only argument she had. It wasn't a very good one, but it was better than the ones that Mr. Warren is now offering. And the fact of the matter is, counsel has presented quite a bit of argument, I think close to 70 pages of briefs, but nowhere there in those briefs is the AEDPA standard for review even discussed. Nowhere in those briefs is the controlling recent Supreme Court decision of Harrington v. Ritger even discussed. I would simply state that the Wisconsin courts did not act contrary to or unreasonably apply any of the Supreme Court guilty plea precedent for a voluntary intelligent plea, or Strickland v. Washington, or Jones v. Barnes for effectiveness of trial and appellate counsel. And we would also ask that the court uphold the denial of the due process challenge of the sentence because it was procedurally defaulted by Mr. Warren. And with that, unless there are no further questions, I'll conclude my argument.
Okay, thank you, Mr. O'Brien. Ms. Rooker, have anything further?
Just one point, Your Honor, which is that he didn't know what he was waiving at the plea hearing because he was not informed about the witnesses, and he didn't really fully understand what he could have been convicted of versus what he may have gotten for a plea. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not? Well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your appointment.